Hi, this is John Takis, writer and album producer, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You really are a glutton for punishment. Time and again I've beaten you, humbled you. What makes you think today's outcome will be any different?
Because this time, I won't stop until you're just a greasy smear on my fist. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to Geekcast Radio. This is yet again another interview. I am your host, TF2 and Mike, and joining me almost, I think it's almost a year or so since the last time. I'll have to look this up. I just had it up on geekcastradio.com. I believe it's been almost a full year since I interviewed Neil S. Bulk, one of the album producers who works on multiple label records. Oh no, actually Neil was 5 months ago. Okay then. Yeah, I don't know time, ladies and gentlemen. Neil S. Bulk, he has worked with La La Land Records and other companies, and we talked about Lethal Weapon. This interview I'm talking to, you'll have to make I want to make sure I get your name right. It is John Takis or Takis?
Takis is how we've said it. I respond to pretty much anything.
Okay. So Mr. John Takis is here with us. He is an album producer who has worked on many, many different projects. A couple of the biggest ones right now that most people will know is the Superman the Animated Series Volume 1 4-disc set from La La Land Records. Did you work on Batman the Animated Series Volume 2?
I did. I wrote the liner notes for that project, and I did a little informal consulting, but I was not a producer on that album.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. He has recently just released this past month from La La Land Records, Batman the Animated Series Volume 3, which you did do the liner notes for that.
Yep.
Other projects that people will know him from, Star Trek Generations, score. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. With Jeff
very
Bond.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Let's see, what else will people recognize you from? Star Trek Insurrection?
I did several of the Star Trek ones with Jeff Bond, who mainly worked on the booklet notes while I did track by track analyses for the website.
Awesome. You also worked on Batman Brave and the Bold's soundtrack release as well.
Mm-hmm.
Willard,
a great one. Shirley Walker, one of her finest film scores. Yeah.
Interesting. Yes, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have John on is because when the Superman the Animated Series set released, I nearly fell over. Fell out of my chair looking at that track list because, oh my god. One of the things with La La Land Records and their DC Animated Universe, I guess, contracts or whatever that they have set up with Warner Brothers to get these things onto disc, I'm always wondering what scores they're going to put on which releases. And a few weeks ago, I had talked with actually MV Gerhard and Matt Verbois, mm-hmm. the co-founders of La La Land Records,
yep.
and we talked about, you know, Batman Beyond and Justice League and more, you know, Batman the Animated Series and how they're going to be going through and getting the stuff gradually on. Like, right now, what I am most anxious for is Over the Edge and Old Wounds from Batman the Animated Series. I need those scores on a disc.
Yes, well, those,
especially Old Wounds.
Those are fantastic scores. I've watched those quite recently. And those ones are from the new Batman Adventures, which is when they yeah. revamped the show while Superman was on the air.
Yep.
It's on the agenda.
So Batman the Animated Series Volume 3 just released, like I said, mm-hmm. about a month ago or so.
Less than a month. It's
about 21 days.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Yeah, something like that. It features scores from Eternal Youth, Prophecy of Doom, Day of the Samurai, Night of the Ninja, a whole heck of a lot of awesome music.
24 full episodes, yeah.
Yes. Now, that's always interesting to me, how many episodes you guys can get on, whether it's a two-disc or a four-disc. And I noticed that with you guys working with La La Land, they tend to, at this point, go with, especially for the archival stuff, they go with the four-disc or the multi-disc instead of just usually the two-disc sets.
Yeah, well, I mean, MV and Matt, they're big supporters of this music, and they've been very, you know, generous in producing these very generous length sets, which is wonderful because it means that we can really spotlight these scores in their fullness. Each one, you know, kind of developed as its own kind of mini film score, and so we've been able to put out a lot of stuff that we wouldn't have been able to do in the context of, you know, a compilation album. Now there are shows where the like, you know, Young Justice, where it's less, you know, broken down by episodes. But, you know, it's the needs of the particular project and the style of scoring. And for these Batman and Superman shows, they really were conceived as these mini movies. And so thanks to the generous nature of these sets, I think really been able to reflect and honor that.
I mean, yeah, at this point, Batman the Animated Series has 10 total discs released.
Yeah, it blows my mind. It really does. You know, the show came on the air when I was 12. I can't say that I was, you know, there on day one watching the very first episode. Batman wasn't much on my radar. This is kind of the show that put it on my radar. But I would catch it on, you know, coming home after school. And I was hooked very quickly. And my first exercise in soundtrack frustration was going to the local Harmony House. People who are old enough will remember that establishment. and saying, well, you know, I want the Batman the Animated Series soundtrack. I don't see it on the shelf. Can you order it for me? And you know, it took the clerk some time to convince me that no such thing existed. And so that was kind of my first experience with crushing disappointment. So the idea now that, you know, there's so much out and more to come, even, you know, from these shows. Yeah, it's quite surreal to be working on it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's got to be such a dream, and especially now with this third set for Batman, you've got, you know, I rattled off some of the episode titles earlier, a second ago, you got stuff like POV, The Clock King, Robin's Reckoning.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've got so, like, the one score on this set that I have been dying for since 1994 is The Forgotten.
Yeah.
It's the, it's the dream sequence. It is the sweatbox breakout trapped in the canyon. I think it's the sweatbox breakout and trapped in the canyon. That track is that really, really Western feel kind of music.
Yeah,
it's got that dun dun. You know,
you got the harmonica. You got the steel guitar. You know, it's a really interesting score, and it really shows the show's range. There's no other score like that in the entire series that combines those particular elements. It's almost got a throwback vibe to it, you know, like kind of 70s action shows. But there's also just some gorgeous writing in there, and you're right. Yeah, the moment where he recovers his identity and he has that little sequence, and you see, you know, his parents throw him up into the air, and then he doesn't come down, and then there's the tombstone. Yeah, Shirley could take an episode that had disparate elements like that and combine them into this wonderful functioning whole, in ways that you just wouldn't expect, but that are so, you know, wonderful to be able to listen to. And that's a score that wouldn't necessarily, you know, have been fast tracked for volumes one or two, because it doesn't have a major villain. It's, you know, it's not like regarded as an all-time classic of the bat literature, as it were. But the music is just phenomenal, and it's such a pleasure to be able to put it out there at last.
Absolutely. So give our listeners a little bit of background on yourself. How did you get into becoming an album producer? Was it that love of soundtracks and scores as a child that, you know, Because most kids, most of us as, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-old kids say, I want to be a police officer. I want to be a firefighter. I want to be, you know, a doctor or whatever. So how did you end up becoming the album producer to the stars?
Well, my album production experience, I should note, is relatively limited. I've done a lot more writing than I have producing. And while I can't say that I wanted, you know, specifically, you know, to do that, I mean, I always wanted to be a writer. And I remember getting some of those early, you know, soundtrack albums back when expanded soundtracks were just starting to become a thing, you know, in the 90s. I remember, you know, the Raiders of the Lost Ark expansion that came out, and it had liner notes by Lucas Kendall, who was, you know, doing Film Score Monthly at the time. And he did a track by track analysis in there. And I remember the Star Wars Special Edition trilogy, which had wonderful notes by Mike Matacino. And so at the time, you know, I was just a teenager in Michigan, and, you know, all this stuff is happening very far away. And so you don't think that, oh, well, that would be me someday. But it did get me writing about film music specifically, which had been a passion of mine since a very young child. So film music and writing kind of came naturally. And I discovered just out of high school, I think I discovered Film Score Monthly. And I sent something in about, it was about Jaws. I sent it into their letters column, and Lucas Kendall said, hey, how'd you like to do some reviews for the magazine? So I kind of cut my teeth doing that. And, you know, it's like many things. You meet people, you form relationships, and, you know, eventually someone asks you to do something. So Joseph Koryak, who was the art director for Film Score Monthly, was also, you know, did a lot of work for the record labels. He was working for Entrada, and he said, you know, we're going to be releasing more CDs more frequently. How'd you like to write? You know, we'll give you a shot, see how it works. And it just kind of went from there. With La La Land Records, I came in because Neil Bulk suggested me on a project, which was Batman Returns, which is my favorite live action Batman score, by the way, Danny Elfman. Batman Returns. And so I started working for that label. And MV and Matt, you know, MV knew what a passionate fan I was of Batman the Animated Series and Shirley Walker. And he invited me to write the notes for Volume 2. And, you know, he'd ask, you know, we'd talk about it. I'd send, you know, information and my research and stuff. And, you know, I was able to pretty much answer any question that they could have come up with. So he said, would you like to be a co-producer with Neil on Superman and Batman? And of course, how can you turn that down? So, but it's been a real pleasure. You know, everyone there is at the label is great and has been very supportive and just really interested in making these the best releases that they can possibly be.
What had you more excited, the Batman releases or the Superman release?
Well, it's funny you should ask. Back, I can only put this, I suppose, through the perspective of what I was thinking back before any of this happened, right? Mm-hmm. So before any of this happened, I think at the time I was on a real Superman kick, and while I would say my first allegiance was to Batman and all that stuff, at least with Batman, we had something. We had an album for Mask of the Phantasm that had, you know, it had the Shirley's Batman theme on it. It had the Joker's theme on it, as something representative of the series and all of its breadth and majesty. You know, it was woefully inadequate. It was something. Whereas with Superman, we had nothing. We had absolutely nothing. This in spite of the fact, if you go back actually and you look at old VHS tapes of that World's Finest three-parter, it says it says in the fine print on the back, it says soundtrack available. And I took that as a promise, you know, and tried to find it. But of course, it was just boilerplate. Someone had made a mistake. There was no soundtrack available. I got to interview Shirley Walker in 2006, just a few months before she died. And we got to talking about, you know, some of my favorite stuff. And at the time, I think what I wanted most of all, more than anything, because remember, this, none of this had come out. I wasn't thinking about multi-disc sets or anything like that. I was thinking about something. I want something. And the number one on my list was that two-part legacy episode, the finale of Superman, which was just, I think, the pinnacle of Shirley's work on that series. You know, it came, it was just an all-time high for me. So I think probably that had me more excited than anything else. But of course, at the time that we wound up producing Superman, at that time we had already we'd had two volumes of Batman the Animated Series. So there again, you know, it was easy to be the most excited about that. But Batman really was my first love, and where I think most of my fan energy lies. But I love them both. They're both phenomenally great series, and the Superman set in particular, I'm really proud of how that turned out.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It really, really is. I don't know how you guys can get... I mean, this is 20 full episodes out of, what, 52?
Is it
54.
Yeah, 54.
So this is 20 full episodes out of 54. I don't know. I don't know how you're going to get the other 34 onto one... One but, more volume.
Well, the answer is that we wouldn't if there was only one more volume, unless we wanted to start, you know, chopping up the scores. And in that case, we'd have to make some pretty severe cuts to get all 34 into 40s. Superman had longer, typically had longer scores than the Batman scores.
Right. Yeah.
Just, I don't know if it was because there was more action or less, you know, spaces for brooding silence.
Yeah, Superman's really not a brooder. He's more of a man of action.
He's more of a man. A little bit of brooding, but not. It's a show that's much more about light and color and action. You know, Batman created space for silence. The Batcave, you know, Commissioner Gordon's the office. There are locations that. Not uniformly, but most of the time, you know, it's the quiet, reflective sound design, you know. So the scores for Batman tended to be a little bit shorter than Superman.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed looking through some of my playlists and looking through, start of Volume 3 with Robin's Reckoning. The track 3, the Boy Wonder track, is only 57 seconds. But it's 57 seconds of awesomeness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's there are shorter tracks, you know, on these sets too, and it's just a question of how it flows. You know, it for me, it was important to present the material as complete as possible and as chronological as possible, just because the way that the music develops and evolves over the course of the episode, you know, it's very carefully done. They didn't have a lot of time to waste in these shows. You know, they're only, you know, 21 minutes, of episode that can be scored, you know, so, every second kind of counts.
And if you take out the minute and a half or 2.5 minutes, that is the opening theme and closing theme, you have even shorter time.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's not a lot of filler in these episodes. The music always counted. Shirley, and part of that is Shirley, she was always involved with the spotting sessions, you know, determining where there should be music and where there wouldn't. And she just had great instincts, great dramatic instincts for when to bring in the music and when it would play better without.
Yeah, I remember listening to the Superman set, and it always kind of worries me when I don't hear anything, when I know something is supposed to be playing, and there's a track somewhere, I don't know, I'd have to go back and look and find it, you might know where it is, but there's a track where, on the Superman set, where it's her and Bruce Timm talking at the end of a cue, and she's talking about how Bruce and the WB guys wanted, you know, full scores, no inserting, just regular old music. They wanted composition and everything else. And I heard that and I was like, wow, I can't believe they included that on this. Because I wouldn't like Music of the Bat 101 in the first volume. It's like, I wouldn't think a track like that would be on there.
You know, it anytime we find little things like that illuminate the creative process, the behind the scenes stuff, you know, they're just, it's little Easter eggs, you know,
right.
It's I mean, some of the stuff, some of the demo stuff is more substantial than that, because it really is, as in Music of the Bat, you know, literally Shirley Walker sits down and explains, you know, the creative process of how this theme, you know, evolves and interacts with the material around it. So that can be very, very illuminating. And then some of the stuff, you know, we just throw on there as an Easter egg because it's fun. And it all, you know, we want to convey a little bit something of the spirit of the people who are working on this. You know, these were professionals, but they loved what they did and they had a good time doing it. And so, you know, it's good to convey that.
Absolutely. So as a producer, walk the listeners through kind of what the process is for you and what you have to do to get something like Superman or something like Batman Volume 3 out to us as listeners.
Well, it starts above my level. You know, it starts where MV or Matt say, okay, this is going to be the release. This is going to be the scope of the release. Mm-hmm. In the case of Batman and Superman, you know, we may come down from the beginning and say, okay, we're going to include, you know, A, B, and C, and then the rest has to kind of be put together. So it involves me kind of going back and you know, making a lot of notes and trying out a lot of combinations. I try and, you know, figure out how much music is in each episode, how the episodes are going to play together on a disc, you know, which episodes you're going to pick for this set, how to arrange them so that it's a satisfying, you know, listening experience for people who just want to pop in their CD and hit play. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of logistical figuring things out. And then, my co-producer Neil S. Bolt over in LA, is tasked with kind of, actually obtaining the material, transferring the tapes, getting everything ready to be mastered. Then I have to sit down and we figure out, how the tracks are going to be sequenced, you know, which cues are you going to combine, how are you going to combine them? So again, more logistical stuff. You have to make sure that everything you want on the disc is going to fit on the disc, where you're going to put the bonus tracks, and actually getting the materials. You know, sometimes the composers have, you know, DATs handy. Some things we get from the studio. Once in a while, things, you know, we have to hunt for things that aren't immediately apparent. Once we have everything, once we figured out exactly how it's going to go, then it, you know, it goes off to get mastered. I've got to write the notes, or, you know, someone, if it was a release I was not writing for, would have to write the notes. Mm-hmm. You get it to the art director. On Superman, we had Jim Titus, Batman, the Animated Series, Volume 3, Dan Goldwasser. And there's a long process of choosing the images, and you got to review the text. You got to make sure that it's as error free as, you know, you can reasonably make it. I'll correct whatever typos you catch. And then everything needs to get submitted to the studio for their approval. So, you know, it's a pretty involved process, but, you know, everyone involved over there is old pros at it by this time. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. What is one episode that has yet to be released that you are hoping for at this point?
Well, at this, the number one thing, because this goes back to that, like I said, that original conversation with Shirley Walker. Mm-hmm. You know, she and I were talking about, you know, what some of my favorite things were that she'd worked on, that she'd been able to do. And there was Superman Legacy, like I said, and then I came up with, I think with, you know, I sent little fan letters, mini fan letters of praise for like my top five episodes from Batman the Animated Series and the spinoffs there. And four of those have already been released. The last one that hasn't been released yet, because it's part of the Adventures of Batman and Robin block, mm-hmm. is Harlequinade. Harlequinade was probably is way up there in my all-time favorite series scores. So of the ones that have yet to be released, I would say that's tops on my list.
Awesome. What, as far as other projects you have going on, what else are you working on at this point in time?
Oh, I couldn't say.
Oh, come
I
on.
really can't. If you're talking to a label head, they can come out and say, "Oh yeah, we're working on this, we're working on that." I'm a little bit further down on the totem pole, so it's not for me to give anything away. I can tell you that, we are working on more DC animated stuff. There's more great stuff coming down the pipeline. I'm trying to think. I did the notes for the last Starfighter for Entrada. That's one that's not a secret. That's coming out very soon, just as soon as I think the studio artwork approvals come through. So there's that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can talk about. There's not a lot. I'm sorry.
All right. You're also you. You know, you said you grew up wanting to be a writer, and you are also a writer. What looking at your website here, you've written some otherworldly type stories.
Yeah, I've done a little speculative fiction, mostly playing in other people's sandboxes, like the some of the Star Trek Strange New Worlds anthologies from Pocket Books. I've got a story in a Professor Challenger anthology coming out next year. So yeah, I've dabbled in fiction, and also a little bit of nonfiction outside the film music world. I did a historical article for a local Michigan magazine a while back. But most of what I write these days, most of the energy goes into a liner notes.
Yeah, it's so nice. La La Land specifically, because those are the people that I deal with. I mean, I bought the Transformers the movie score from Vince DiCola from Entrada. I got that from them. But like La La Land Records, they are, in my personal opinion, the premier soundtrack and score company at this point. And they're still putting discs out, in an age where you'd think, oh, well, it'd be much easier to just let people, have a digital version of it. Well, it's not exactly the same feeling.
No. And I think that, well, I think the great thing about working, because I do a lot of work for Entrada. I do a lot of work for La La Land. It is very interesting because, the labels have different focuses and different areas where they concentrate their energy. They have different styles. But I think I personally could not, say, oh, well, this one's the best, that one's the best. Just
Right, right.
because, again, they're so kind of different in their philosophy and but and there's some overlap, obviously. But you've got La La Land doing, the DC animated stuff. Entrada put out those wonderful, Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers sets, which was my, great pleasure to work on those. So we're very fortunate, I think, that the market is the way it is, and that we're getting, more stuff now than we've ever gotten in the past. There's so many holy grails, so many dream projects. Gosh, Entrada just put out, Young Sherlock Holmes finally made it to the finish line this year.
Right.
And, how long have we been wanting that? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. What other trying to think, what other soundtracks, whether they be television or film, or what other ones would you expect to? No, that's. I'm trying to think of how to word this without asking, like, obviously the question I already asked.
It's probably dangerous even for me to speculate because people may read my speculations into coy hints at something that's yet to come. Yeah, I mean, I
All right. I'll ask the question this way. This is much easier. What project, whether it be animation, television, film, video game, whatever, what soundtrack project that has never had a soundtrack release would you want the most in the future.
Of any kind.
Any kind. Anything.
That is, but that has never been released. Oh, goodness gracious. That's a tough one. I don't know. Gosh, it's because so many, of course, so many of the great ones have been released in some shape or form, in some way. I don't know. I can think of some recent things that haven't come out yet that I would like to see. There's a British mystery show called Father Brown that has some very good music. And that's, I believe, by Debbie Wiseman. Yeah, Debbie Wiseman. She's done some great work on that show. I'll look forward to Bear McCreary's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. When and if that happens. Yeah, that's a tough one. That's one I wasn't expecting. Now, I can tell you that probably my dream soundtrack project, and I don't know how likely this is to happen, I would love someday for someone to do a really definitive re-recording of Miklos Roja's music for The Jungle Book, the 1942 version. I think it's 42. It's 1940s anyway. The original tracks that were rescued by the Film Music Society are very degraded and incomplete, and very archival in nature, not really for listening pleasure. And there's an excellent concert suite. But the concert suite too is very incomplete compared to the film score. There are dimensions of that score, and that's the score that really got me into film music, you know, thinking about film music. And there are certainly enough Roja recordings going around. I suppose it's possible that it could happen someday, but really that's kind of a dream project at the moment. And Lawrence Rosenthal too, there's still a lot of his works that need to be released. Some really good stuff. Shirley Walker, of course. Her final Destination scores, and then there's a score she did for Disney, The Love Bug, TV movie, very obscure. I'm sure not many people have heard of, but it's a fantastic score. She wrote one of the best bad guy themes in her entire career for an evil car, you know, an evil version of Herbie. So, those are some of the things I would like to see happen, that I don't know if they will. You were asking what it was like.
Well, yeah. What was it like? I mean, you were, you know, you're like me. You grew up watching these shows.
Yeah.
And you grew up, I'm sure I knew her name at some point, or, you know, you see the names in the credits. You might not know who exactly it is, but you know what I mean? So what was it like just sitting down and talking with her?
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, the thing is, again, I had been an admirer of her for such a long time. At the time I interviewed her in 2006, I had not done a lot of I hadn't really done any high, what I'd call high profile interviews. And the whole experience of interviewing someone was still pretty new and intimidating to me. And so I kind of put it off for a long time. And partly because it you know, there she wasn't doing any big stuff with the superhero stuff for a while, after Superman and Batman Beyond. And so, you know, I was kind of had wanted to have a good hook, and ultimately I decided, well, let's just do it. My friend Doug Adams, who he's the author of the music of the Lord of the Rings films. He's an associate of Howard Shore. He had interviewed Shirley a few years back, and he said, well, you know, you really ought to do it. You know, he kind of prodded me into it, and said, yeah, there's no reason to wait any longer. It'll be fine. She's, you know, she's great to talk to. So we set it up, and she was, you know, more than happy to speak to me. And she was just an extraordinarily kind and funny and generous. You know, she put me right at my ease, and it meant a lot, you know, because I had always loved her work. I had always felt, and still do, that, you know, that she has not gotten enough credit. for what an extraordinary person she was, and an extraordinary composer she was, just one of the all-time greats. And it meant an awful lot. I was on cloud nine at the end of the interview. You know, we emailed a few times in the subsequent weeks. I was hoping to interview her again, maybe after Black Christmas came out. But of course, a few weeks later, she very tragically passed away, and so I was devastated. So you know, looking back on the whole experience, I think on the one hand, my God, how sad it was, how tragic it was. You know, she was so loved and admired, and she was taken from us far too soon. But I also feel just extraordinarily fortunate to have been able to make that connection. And again, you know, thank goodness that Doug prompted me to do it when I did, because, you know, you don't think about that sort of thing, but I would not, you know, at that point, after that, the opportunity would have been gone if we'd waited any longer.
Yeah.
So,
and for the record, I do remember the love bug.
You do remember the love bug.
I don't remember the 1997.
Bruce Campbell. Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Briscoe County Jr. himself. 3 years after Briscoe County ended, this is what he ended up with.
This is what he ended up with. The film is not well loved or well remembered, but my goodness, does it have a fantastic score by Shirley Walker. So, and it was right then in 96, yeah, at the peak of her Batman and, you know, Superman powers there. So, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Herbie Fully Loaded is more hated than The Love Bug.
Well, I mean, no one remembers the TV remake. I don't think enough people know it to hate it. I think, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's a bad film. I think it's a, you know, inoffensive, you know, entertaining TV movie. But it just, you know, I'm not even sure it's ever even been out on home video. There might have been a VHS release, but anyway, yeah. I mean, that's the joy and the frustration of this hobby, is discovering all these obscure gems, and then the frustration, of course, is then not having soundtracks of them. So,
yeah. Well, with La La Land and other companies like Entrada, you know, these companies are putting out amazing.
Yeah,
huh?
Quartet, you know, out in Spain, Quartet is doing some great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, amazing stuff. I mean, just the, like, every week that La La Land sends me a newsletter, you know, an email newsletter, it's like, ooh, I need to contact him. Ooh, I need to contact Matt. It's like every single week is like, I want this, 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 and this, and this. Because I've been reviewing for them for this Christmas will be a year, I think. Well, it'll be a little bit more than that. Yeah. But like the biggest thing I reviewed from them, I never thought they'd send me one. Lethal Weapon. And people can listen to me and Neil S. Bulk talk all kinds of Riggs and Murtaugh over on Neil's. Oh, man. Oh, Michael Kamen, talk about another great, great composer, great musician.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Michael Kamen had he had a sensibility that just was unlike anyone else. I think probably my favorite Kamen score is Brazil, mm-hmm. which again, it's just one of those, one of my favorite films and one of my favorite, musical accompaniments. You know, it's almost more than a score. It's got all the songs weaving in and all that. And he's another incredibly talented individual who left us too soon.
Yeah, I had no idea at the time. Like when I was doing research for Neil's interview, no idea he also did the Die Hard movies. I knew he did Lethal Weapon, but I had no clue that he did the Die Hard movies.
Yeah,
as well.
Well, he was very chameleon. You know, he could do because they don't sound anything alike. That's the thing. They're absolutely their own thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Takis. That has been the GCRN latest interview, I should say. Episode 75 of Geek Key. can't talk. Episode 75 of Geekcast Radio, our podcast here, our flagship show, will actually be our year in review episode coming up on New Year's Eve this year. In between that, I'm hoping to get some more interviews with other people and put them on the feed. But yeah, we at GCRN have a lot to celebrate since this is our 5-year anniversary this year. June 1st, 2009. Oh boy, long time. So thank you again, John. Unleash the geek in you, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you very much.
As he can still draw a breath. None of my teammates will. Me? I've got a different problem. I feel like I live in a world made of cardboard, always taking constant care not to break something, to break someone. Never allowing myself to lose control, even for a moment, or someone could die. You can take it, can't you, big man? What we have here is a rare opportunity for me to cut loose and show you just how powerful I really am.
You've just listened to Geekcast Radio on the Geekcast Radio Network. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First, visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on all of our different podcasts. Second, you can rate our show and leave us feedback in iTunes. Third, follow us on Twitter at geekcastradio. Fourth, become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/geekcastradio. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for and your name. So until next time, unleash the geek in you.